You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to This Day in History with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, This Day in History, going back to 2003 for the capture of Saddam Hussein. He'd, of course, been in charge of the country of Iraq until he was invaded by the United States. I'm sure we're all familiar with that, in the same year. After he...
I have heard of the United States, yes.
Oh, good one, Lachlan. Still got that wit. After sort of 9/11 and all that had gone on, Bush had issued him an ultimatum to come up with these weapons he said he had and leave power. Saddam said no. Americans, of course, then went in.
Good afternoon, I'm John Sopel in Kuwait City. You're watching a BBC News special, the headlines. The attack on Iraq has begun. US forces fired cruise missiles at Baghdad just before dawn, apparently targeting the Iraqi leadership. President Bush announced the start of the military campaign on American television.
At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
Saddam Hussein has accused President Bush of committing a crime against humanity. And coalition troops go on alert as Iraq retaliates and fires missiles at northern Kuwait. Good afternoon and welcome to a BBC News special live from Kuwait City, where you can probably hear in the background the faithful being called to prayer. It's been a ghost town today, Kuwait City, after air raid sirens started to go off this morning. Three air raid sirens throughout the day have taken people down to the bunkers to flee for cover. We can have a look at the scenes earlier on today as people took shelter after the first air raid sirens sounded. People had to don their gas masks and were scurrying around the streets trying to find cover. All the shops shut. The shopping malls were strangely empty, and suddenly the streets were deserted, and the eerie sound of the air raid sirens filled the streets.
That was part one of This Day in History. Part two will be right back after a quick break. Yeah.
Northern Base is your home for deep bass-filled good times this New Year's, with Action Bronson, Chasing Status, Joey Badass, Pendulum Live, Shapeshifter, The Upbeats, DJ Storm, Caliber and DRS, Montau 2099, State of Mind, Mellow Downs, the Katayanagi Twins, and so much more. This will sell out. Northern Base, December 29th to the 31st in gorgeous Mangawhai. Don't miss out. Final release tickets on sale now from northernbase.co.nz.
Whoa, have you seen this?
No.
Apparently, the Earth is dying.
You what?
Shit! What do we do?
Nah, apparently, we're just ignoring it.
Oh, sweet.
Ah, that's easy. I can do that.
The Big Q and the Project for Public Interest Media, in association with 95BFM, present Climate Catastrophe. How will climate change impact Aotearoa, and what can we do about it? A public panel discussion with four leading climate experts. The Big Q Climate Catastrophe, Monday, December 17th at Auckland University. Tickets available from Eventbrite. Go to thebigq.org.
Check it out, dude. This year I'm doing all my Christmas shopping online.
Hella gnarly.
High five.
Yeah.
Suss this year's Christmas shopping online with Real Groovy Records. An unparalleled range of gifts, plus nationwide free delivery on purchases over $50. Hella gnarly. Real Groovy Records. Corporate free since 81. Go to realgroovy.co.nz.
Mummy, how do I
keep on the cutting edge of great new music?
Well, when a DJ loves a record very, very much, they do a special kind of cuddle.
Never mind, I've sorted it out.
The answer to your problems. Follow 95BFM on Spotify for a lovingly curated collection of what's new, what's hot, and what's good in music. December features Fano Spa, Michelle McCure, Earl Sweatshirt, Earth Tongue, and more. 95BFM's monthly Spotify playlist. Stay au fait.
Yes, we now return to this day in history when we left off. The United States and its coalition of the willing, which is sort of itself the UK and a few other countries, had invaded Iraq. Unfortunately for them, they did not manage to snatch up Saddam. He sort of got away. But then they did manage to track him down on this day in history, 2003.
What did they track him down in?
Where was he? In a hole.
He was in a little hole.
It was sort of like a tunnel.
Well,
he was in a house, and then they turned up, and then he got in the hole.
Utterly, but I cannot believe I only found this out today. Anyway, here he is. The man in the hole.
Where else was he going to be?
I don't know, in a tree.
In space.
In Argentina.
When American forces finally caught up with Saddam Hussein today, he was hiding in a crawl space, a spider hole, the military called it, underneath the floor of a small shack outside his hometown of Tikrit. He was described as disoriented at first and then, as time went by, unrepentant and defiant. After 10 months hunting him, in the end, the man who has gone from American ally to American nemesis surrendered without a fight. When the news of his capture was first broadcast, there was a quick celebration in the streets of many Iraqi cities and certainly in the administrative offices of the Bush administration and the American government. This is a real victory for U.S. forces in Iraq and for President Bush.
In the history of Iraq, a dark and painful era is over. A hopeful day has arrived. All Iraqis can now come together and reject violence and build a new Iraq.
Tonight on this broadcast, we'll report on what the U.S. and Iraqis have in store for Hussein, what his capture may mean to the struggle to create a new government in Iraq, and whether American soldiers in Iraq and Iraqis are now safer. We begin with the capture. Here's ABC's Martha Raddatz.
Saddam Hussein was hiding in a narrow dirt hole with only a pistol at his side when U.S. soldiers moved in.
There were no injuries, and in fact, not a single shot was fired.
This mission began 10 days ago, with U.S. Special Forces aggressively tracking the former Iraqi leader, going after members of families in Tikrit who were suspected of having ties to Saddam Hussein.
We brought in about 5 to 10 members of these families who then were able to give us even more information. And finally, we got the ultimate information from one of these individuals.
That tip came at 10:50 yesterday morning. Reliable information that Saddam Hussein was hiding just 15 miles south of Tikrit.
Two likely locations were identified near the town of Adwar. And for operational purposes, these locations were identified as Wolverine 1 and Wolverine 2.
By 6 p.m., 600 artillery, cavalry, aviation, and special operations forces from the 1st Brigade Combat Team of the 4th Infantry Division were in position, surrounding the sites. 8 p.m., the combat team began the assault on Wolverine 1 and 2, the two small structures identified by the informant. But they did not find Saddam Hussein. The entire area was then cordoned off, and a more intensive search began.
Coalition forces subsequently found a suspicious location to the northwest of Wolverine 2.
It was a small, walled compound with a flimsy metal lean-to, cluttered with clothes. At 8:26 p.m., U.S. troops entered the compound and noticed a small camouflaged opening, or spider hole. A pile of bricks and dirt were pushed aside, and there he was, disheveled, dirty, the man who ruled Iraq for so long.
A bit disoriented, obviously, as he came up, but he was just very much bewildered, and then he was taken away. I think it's rather ironic that he was in a hole in the ground across the river from these great palaces that he's built, where he robbed all the money from the Iraqi people.
Two others believed to be bodyguards were also arrested at the compound, in addition to $750,000, two AK-47 rifles, and a white and orange taxicab. At 9:15, Saddam Hussein was taken to the Baghdad International Airport. Over the next few hours, he was given a medical checkup and his beard was shaved. He was positively ID'd by other former regime leaders held captive and through physical characteristics. It was not until after 3 p.m. today in Baghdad that the top civilian in Baghdad, Paul Bremer, announced the capture.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him. This is a great day in Iraq's history. For decades, hundreds of thousands of you suffered at the hands of this cruel man.
But it was the tape of the bearded Saddam Hussein, glassy-eyed and defeated, that brought cheers from the Iraqi reporters in the room. After initially cooperating with U.S. forces, Saddam Hussein is now saying very little. Members of the Iraqi Governing Council, those who once opposed Saddam Hussein, were allowed a visit with him today.
We found him obviously tired and haggard, but he was unrepentant and even defiant.
One U.S. official described Saddam Hussein as behaving like a smart aleck during his interrogation and not making a whole lot of sense, Peter. But Saddam Hussein does admit who he is.
Many thanks, Martha. Martha Raddatz in Washington. Word of this capture surprised people no matter where they were, certainly Iraqis. Images of, pictures of the vulnerable-looking former dictator played over and over again on Iraqi television and throughout the Middle East. Some Iraqis certainly took to the streets, because celebratory gunfire killed at least four people and wounded 60. ABC's Martin Seemungo picks up the rest of the day from Baghdad.
Celebrations from Baghdad to the northern cities of Kirkuk and Sulaymaniyah. Spontaneous demonstrations over the capture of Saddam Hussein. Joy and relief that the dictator is no more. I would strangle him to death, he says, because he hurt our people, killed our sons. This is a great day. We hope relatives of those killed by Saddam Hussein will feel good, says this man, now that he has been arrested.
He represented evil, he represented tyranny, he represented chemical weapons. At long last, that nightmare is over.
In Saddam Hussein's hometown, Tikrit, American tanks rolled through the streets, but there wasn't much celebrating, only apprehension, even doubt.
It's completely impossible that they can catch him. He knows all the places, so can't be they can't catch him.
Even in the capital, the demonstrations were vocal but small. There was lots of celebratory gunfire, but people did not take to the streets in large numbers. One possible explanation, fear of a backlash from Saddam Hussein loyalists, the insurgents who've been killing coalition forces. And despite today's startling images, many people here are in shock. They are still trying to fully comprehend what's happened.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.